And welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodrigues here. When word got around that Josh Kilmer Purcell, an advertising art director, and Brent Ridge, a physician, had purchased a 60-acre farm and were learning how to live off the land, the press quickly took notice of the unlikely farmers. Soon, this duo found themselves in the spotlight with their own reality TV show called The Fabulous Beekman Boys. The show was pegged as a modern take on the fish-out-of-water TV show sitcom Green Acres from years ago, with the stylish urban couple getting their hands dirty and living the small-town life. Their newfound fame afforded them the opportunity to participate in the 2012 season of CBS's The Amazing Race. You might remember them from The Amazing Race. They took home the $1 million grand prize. They now own and operate Beekman 1802, a so-called lifestyle brand that promotes living seasonally. That's eating what's growing when it's growing. And the Beekman boys have just released the Beekman 1802 Heirloom Vegetable Cookbook, 100 delicious recipes from the farm and garden, a cookbook that is arranged season by season, and that's why we have them on the show. So this is a special edition of Midday Eats with the fabulous Beekman boys, Josh and Brent. I'm glad you could get to that studio in New York for our show today, guys. How you doing?
Oh, it's great to be here.
Thanks very much for getting there. Was that Josh?
That was Brent, and Josh is still catching his breath from running down the block.
Oh, okay. Well, nice to get you back on the show. I remember we spoke, I don't know when that was, a year ago, maybe 2 years ago.
I think when our first cookbook came out.
Yeah, I think that's right. I need to dig right in here and ask a couple of questions that might force you to recap a little bit for us the origins of the Fabulous Beekman Boys and that earlier TV show on Discovery. You know, did you guys have green thumbs? How did all that start? Just refresh my memory and that of our listeners.
Well, sure. Well, we were those, you know, Manhattan folks who drove out to the country every weekend, or not every weekend, but every few weekends and sort of bothered the locals. And Brent worked for Martha Stewart, and he was a physician as well here in New York City, and I worked in advertising, and we would get away for the weekend. And one of our weekend getaways was up in upstate New York, and we got lost in Sharon Springs, and we fell in love with this little town. And both Brent and I had been brought up in rural environments, Brent in North Carolina and me in Wisconsin. And we kind of fell in love with the little town, and it reminded us of our roots, and we bought a beautiful farm, and it was just supposed to be a weekend place until 2008 hit, and we both lost our big fancy city jobs, and we had to find a way to make the farm pay for itself, so we had to learn how to farm.
Okay, thank you for that recap, Josh. Josh Kilmer Purcell and Brent Ridge, our guests in this hour of the show, and So we'll push ahead now. So much has happened since then. I mean, really, think about it. This is amazing what's happened to you guys in 6 years.
It's really true, and I think it's important that we always want to remind people, you know, we did not set out to become reality TV stars. In fact, we would advocate that nobody sets out to become a reality TV star. We had a farm, we needed to learn how to farm, and we needed to make money. And so we had goats by that point, and we started making goat milk soap and goat milk cheese and working with our neighbors who were making wonderful products. So we really started out trying to farm and make a company out of the products we made and the products our neighbors made. And TV found us at that point, which really helped.
Right.
But we were not doing this as some sort of reality stunt.
And that was the Fabulous Beekman Boys was a Planet Green show, right? That was part of Discovery, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And now it airs on Cooking Channel.
Okay. And Sharon Springs, New York, just so we know where you are, this is west of Albany, maybe an hour or so, is that right?
That's right, about 3.5 hours north of New York City, near Cooperstown, New York.
And Josh and Brent, tell us about, would you describe the farm a little bit? I know you like raised beds. I remember from the last conversation we had, a lot of raised beds, a lot. It's gotten bigger over the years.
Yeah, well, we're a 60-acre farm, and we're primarily a goat dairy. So we have a herd of 120 goats. But we raise or grow about 80% of all the food that we personally consume. So, we raise our own you know, beef and pork and chickens and turkeys and rabbits and sheep. And then we grow each year about 110 different varieties of heirloom vegetables. We spread those out through 52 raised beds and then about a half acre just devoted to tomatoes and then another little plot devoted to corn. That's how we feed ourselves. And, you know, it's been kind of a long winter up there, so our garden is just starting to go in. This year, as it has for the past 5 years, it really sustained us throughout the entire year. We can and freeze and dehydrate and anything you can do when the harvest is at its peak, and that's what we eat all winter.
And does the farm sustain the two of you, or do you also sell produce?
The produce from the farm really just sustains us. We occasionally will supply some of the local restaurants if we have a real abundance of something. A couple of years ago, we also kind of ties back into the Amazing Race. Those people who know us from the Fabulous Speakman Boys know that when we first started the business and the farm, we said, okay, we're going to have a year of sacrifice because ultimately after we lost our jobs, Josh got another job in the city.
So I was traveling back and forth, working in the city all week and then coming up on the weekend.
And so we said, okay, we can do this because we were about 12 years into our relationship at that point. We thought, we can take a year and just, do this and Josh will commute and it'll be fine. Well, that, what we called a year of sacrifice turned into 5 years of sacrifice because, any entrepreneur can tell you nothing falls into place as, smoothly as you wish it would.
And that's what viewers saw on the Fabulous Speakman Boys with that real stress of me commuting back and forth and Brent trying to start the business. And what we decided to do was sort of be really honest about it and sell this pasta sauce called the Mortgage Lifter Pasta Sauce, made from real heirloom mortgage lifter tomatoes.
Right, and for those people who don't know, who don't know what the Mortgage Lifter tomato is, it's this wonderful variety of heirloom tomato. And it was first grown by a West Virginia farmer in the early 1930s. And it was so successful for him selling the seedlings that he was able to pay off his mortgage. And so he named the tomato the Mortgage Lifter. And Josh and I, as our company was growing, were always trying to think, okay, what's going to be that product that is so successful that it helps us pay off our mortgage? So, when we first learned about the Mortgage Lifter and the story behind it, we thought, let's grow out lots of those tomatoes. We'll come up with a great pasta sauce recipe. We'll jar it and call it the Mortgage Lifter Pasta Sauce. And that's going to be the thing that pays off our mortgage finally. And then Josh will be at the farm full time.
So we planted this whole, at that point, almost an acre of Mortgage Lifter tomatoes. And then we got the fortunate chance to be on The Amazing Race. And we never had any belief that we would win that prize, but we did. We brought it home, brought home $1 million. We were able to pay off the mortgage, and then we had this field of tomatoes growing still. And we said, we're going to continue to create this pasta sauce, still call it the Mortgage Lifter, and what we've done is 25% of the profits of that sauce now go to help other small farmers who need, we call them lifts, to help them with their debts.
Oh, tell me a little bit about that. That's interesting. So how do you do that? Did you create a fund?
Yep. We create a fund. So each year, we've had the sauce now for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And so each year after the books are closed for the year for taxes, then we literally just take the 25% chunk and give it away. And this year, as I said, was our first year. So we actually just gave away the first, what we call the lift. And we had farms could self-nominate themselves, and we had farms, I think we ended up with 128 farms that were nominated, and we gave out one $10,000 lift and three $1,100, what we call mini lifts. Part of our goal with the Mortgage Lifter Project is not just to give money to farms that are in trouble, but to really identify farms that have a great business plan and are showing that they have everything that they need, kind of all the faculties to make a successful business out of their farm, and then to give them a little extra help and in the process identify those farms that are doing things really well so that other small farms or people interested in farming can learn from them. So it kind of to shine a spotlight on kind of best practices.
Right.
And so we're really excited that the first year of that has gone so well.
We just presented an hour within the last few weeks about young farmers, people getting into farming here in Maryland, in the Baltimore area. And it's pretty exciting. It's hard work, but you know, there's niche farming going on. There's people doing it on a small scale in suburban areas and finding neighbors who are very eager to buy their produce. So this is a growing thing. Of course, we have the whole locavore movement. And I was going to note that Brent and Josh, the fabulous Beekman boys, did benefit from the timing of this green movement, this farm-to-table movement that we've seen here grow and grow. More and more farmers markets coming online. It seems like there's new farmers markets popping up every year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, one of the reasons that our show resonated with so many people was because at that time that they had started filming in the recession, so many people had lost their jobs or were trying to figure out what the next phase of their life was going to be. I think so many people saw their own situations in the situation that was playing out on the television show.
Right. And the mortgage lifter tomato, the original, got that that West Virginia farmer through the depression. It's gotten you guys through the recession and out of the recession. Of course, winning the grand prize in 2012 on the Amazing Race helped too. But now I want to talk about growing vegetables and getting them into the kitchen and cooking them, because this is the Midday Eats Hour. It's usually with John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant in Baltimore and Henry Hong of Waterfront Kitchen. Today, it's with the fabulous Beekman boys, Brent Ridge and Josh Kilmer Purcell, because of their new cookbook, the Beekman 1802 Airline Vegetable Cookbook with 100 recipes. And it's really a fabulous-looking cookbook. Number one, I'm always drawn to the photography in cookbooks, and this one is really tantalizing, and it takes you season by season. So I'd like to start here in the spring and talk about what's actually going on in your farm. You're up in upstate New York, and it has been a long, long winter. I'm sure it was a long winter up there. So, what actually do you see as you look out on the beds today, Josh and Brent?
Well, right now, radishes are in, and the peas are growing, and we have rhubarb and asparagus, and some young leafy greens. And you brought up what we think is the most important part about the cookbook is, and all our cookbooks, is that we actually divide the cookbook by season. So spring, summer, winter, fall. And the reason we do that is because that's how we eat. And a lot of people, as you mentioned, are enjoying CSAs and shopping at their local farmer's market. And so we wanted to create a cookbook you could bring with you to the market. And when you see a lot of something that's in season and affordable, there would be a recipe right there at hand that you can do something with it. And there may be things you don't, you're not even that familiar with. Sorrel or fiddlehead ferns.
Oh, can I stop you on sorrel?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So here's radishes with sorrel butter. Now, I've never done anything with radishes besides wash them, slice them a little bit, and eat them. I'm pretty boring. Maybe put a little salt on them because I love radishes that way. They're not around that long. Right? But here you have radishes split down the middle and stuffed with salted butter. This is something you discovered in France. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I love radishes too, but I got to say I can't have too many of them because they have that sharp, almost oniony aftertaste.
Oh,
it's a bit much. Mm-hmm. And this is something I first had in France, and I was there with my uncle and his partner, who I really learned to get excited about food from them, because visiting them in France, the only thing in their little village was when the farmer's market came to town, and everyone would get so excited with whatever new produce was coming in. And when the radishes came in, everyone would buy them by the bags full, and they would simply eat them with butter, cold butter and salt, and then dip it in a little sort of a soy sauce mixture. And so we've taken that, and we've use butter and sorrel and cook that together. So you have the sharpness of the radish and then the smoothness of the butter, which really smooths it out, and then the sorrel, which has this great lemony flavor, which makes it nice and fresh. But, to your point, everybody just gets radishes.
Yeah.
And if you're getting them from your CSA right now, you're probably sick of eating them raw or in salads. And this is just another great way.
I always bring up Swiss chard, too, in the spring, because we see a lot of Swiss chard. And I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself to some of my listeners. When I belonged to a CSA, it was week after week of Swiss chard. So I wonder, is that something you grow? And do we have I didn't even check to see if you had a recipe on that.
Oh, yeah, we grow Swiss chard. Swiss chard is beautiful. The colors, of course, are amazing. You know, you can get it with the red and the yellow and even white. And we do have a great recipe in there for a Swiss chard pie that has pine nuts and raisins in it. And again, the raisins kind of balance out that almost irony taste that chard can have.
Well, see, now I like that. I'm going to take a look at that because one of the challenges with vegetables, I think, is for people to get creative with them a little bit, you know, because you think of them a certain way. Let me throw another one in here. Dandelions. This is another thing you see in the spring, right? What do you do with dandelions besides salad? I'm always concerned that dandelions get tough and we don't know how to cook them, how to handle them. Could you talk about them a little bit?
Right. Well, you do want to eat the greens, you know, before the blossoms, you know, before they actually start to blossom. That's when the dandelion greens are the best. But even, you know, after the flower comes, you can actually make fritters out of the flower. And they're just like tasty little bites. And, you know, when you live on a farm, you're always trying to figure out how to use anything that's popping up through the ground, whether you're hunting for the ramp or the wild onions or, you know, scallions, always trying to find the best use for everything around you.
And I think dandelions are a little bit strong on their own, and they can get a little bit tough. So just sauteing them as you would any sort of fibrous leafy green can help, or mixing them with other greens. We also have a great recipe that I really love, and it may not sound so delicious, but it's amazing. And it's called the teacup jello salad
I was just going to ask you about this. Teacup jello salad with arugula. I love arugula. I think I'd eat arugula with anything, but go ahead, Josh and Brent.
Well, I was going to say you could substitute dandelions in this, but this recipe came about, you know, as we mentioned, these are all heirloom recipes. So these are recipes. We try to give a nod to Brent and my past, and Brent is Southern and I'm Midwestern, and it always seems like he gets sort of an unfair shake. He gets many more recipes in our cookbooks than I do because the Southern heritage has maybe a richer culinary heritage than Midwestern. So I really wanted, I lobbied really hard. I'm like, we have to get one Jell-O salad in this book to honor my Wisconsin roots.
Yeah.
And so we came up with this wonderful Jell-O salad with arugula. And it has ricotta cheese and cream. It's a savory jello, of course, and a little bit of lime juice and celery and things. And it's just a really nice, cold, refreshing sort of in-between course, salad course.
And you can see that we made that photo in the book exceptionally beautiful because,
it is.
You know, we thought, well, if people just, you know, read the title of this, they're not going to make it, but we really wanted to entice people to make it because it really is one of our favorite recipes in the book, and it's just so refreshing. You can even use it as like a sorbet, you know, to kind of cleanse the palate between courses, and it's just one of those conversation starter recipes.
I was going to say, this looks like intermezzo to me. It involves some pecans, too.
Mm-hmm.
Some lime juice. Heavy. So when you scoop into it with a small spoon, is it feeling like Jell-O or is it feeling creamier? Because you mentioned the ricotta in there.
Kind of like an ambrosia.
Ah.
It is firm, but it has the ricotta, which is really, really wonderful. It's like a custard almost.
Arugula, something you grow in the spring and then again in the fall. Is that right?
Yes. And it will taste almost completely different. You know, any seed that starts its life cold and harvests when it's warm tastes different than one that a seed that starts when it's warm and harvests cold. And you can taste that probably most distinctly in your things like broccoli and cabbage, things that after a first frost, it actually changes the structure of the plant, so the sugars really come out. Brussels sprouts is another. Brassica.
I love Brussels sprouts. Brent and Josh, I need to ask you about artichokes. Do you grow artichokes in New York?
I have tried and failed.
Mm-hmm.
However, it can be done. The artichoke, I may be getting this wrong, but the artichoke has I think it's an 18-month cycle, so it has to. You have in our area, you have to have the right winter, you know, length of winter, and then to get it to actually blossom and get it to this into the get it to set is a whole another matter. But we do have neighbors that do very well with it.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. So let me ask you about this recipe here. And again, maybe my approach has been kind of boring because a few times I get artichokes in the house. I, you know, just steam them and serve them with butter. I don't do too much with them. But here you have deep fried baby artichokes with a roasted pepper sauce. This is also a beautiful photograph. And I'm interested how the artichoke holds up in the frying.
Oh, it actually holds up really, really well. I mean, it's obviously tender after, you know, it's a baby artichoke anyway, but it's very tender to eat. But it actually holds up really well and can support the dip really, really well. I mean, you can see from the photo that, you know, they don't fall apart at all. And it's really, really delicious.
And the younger artichoke, you know, baby artichoke is generally a lot tighter formation than a larger one, so it holds up together, it doesn't fall apart.
Okay, okay. And that sauce, or that it does, it looks like a dip to me, roasted red peppers, or how do you make that?
Oh, it's got smoked paprika and tomato paste. It's very easy. It's a puree, and it's sautéed and then pureed.
With red peppers or red bell peppers?
Yep.
Very good. Listen, I'm going to invite our listeners to join us in this hour of the show. If you're out there toiling in the vegetable garden or you belong to a CSA, you go to the farmers markets, you bring home vegetables, you're like me, you're looking for some new ideas or some old ideas revved up a bit here. Brent Ridge and Josh Kilmer Purcell out with their new cookbook, The Beekman Boys, The Beekman 1802 Heirloom Vegetable Cookbook. Let's talk veggies and cooking them in this hour of Midday Eats. Here's our phone number, 410-662-8780, our toll-free long-distance number. You can speak with the Beekman boys, Josh or Brent, 866-661-9309, 866-661-9309. The Midday email address with a comment or question for you from you, midday@wypr.org. Hi, welcome back. It's a special Thursday edition of Midday Eats because we have the company of Brent Ridge and Josh Kilmer Purcell, better known as the fabulous Beekman Boys from reality TV. And they have a whole line of products under Beekman 1802, now Beekman 1802, the heirloom vegetable cookbook. And Josh and Brent, again, thanks for being with us. And we'll invite calls in this for the remainder of this hour, 410-662-8780 to compare notes on cooking vegetables. As the emphasis is, of course, on vegetables. Now, I'm looking at another photograph from the book, another recipe, asparagus and prosciutto, which I'll go for both of those together anytime.
What could be wrong?
Nothing
could
be
wrong with that recipe.
But here you take it another step and you wrap them in puff pastry. And this looks great, like coiled spears or something here. Go ahead.
This is perfect.
Yeah.
This is perfect, you know, spring, summer cocktail food.
Yeah.
And this is so easy to make. Kids would love to make this. If you have kids who would never, you know, think they would like asparagus, this is a great recipe to get them involved with. And then they will eat it. But basically, you're just taking the asparagus, wrapping the prosciutto around it, and then taking a store-bought puff pastry and then cutting it into slices. And then what we've done is we've created this delicious dressing, rosemary and mustard dressing that you put onto the puff pastry before you wrap the spears and, you know, put them in the oven. And it just comes out so deliciously. And as I said, you know, even if you get your kids involved in this, they're going to learn to love asparagus this way. And I know you said in the earlier segment that, you know, you had grown accustomed to cooking radishes or, you know, eating radishes one way or eating artichokes in a particular way.
And
the reason that the recipes in this book seem creative or more creative than what you might have normally done is because we start out at the beginning of each season, like when the asparagus first comes in, okay, well, we just, you know, roast the asparagus or, you know, we just, you know, make some aioli and have the artichoke.
Mm-hmm.
But once you're harvesting, you know, several pounds of something, you kind of get creative. And that's really kind of the origin of so many of our recipes, both the ones that make it into our book and the ones that go onto our website is we have you know, 5 pounds of kale this week. What are we going to do with the kale?
It's basically the recipes after we got sick of making it our usual way.
Right.
We came up with new things.
Or if somebody in your house announces that they don't want to eat meat for 4 or 5 days a week, or maybe only on the weekends, and then you got to push yourself a little bit more to be creative in the kitchen when it comes to vegetables.
That's right.
Right. Or even just cut back on your meat. You know, even though this is our heirloom vegetable cookbook, some of the recipes do have meat in it. We just want the vegetable to be first and foremost, and then the meat can add to it. So it's a great way to sort of just cut back on your meat.
Josh and Brent, I just recently discovered another use for chive besides chopping it up and sprinkling it on mashed potatoes or baked potato, and that is chive oil. Donna Crivello of Donna's restaurants or cafes here in Baltimore came up with this chive oil, almost like a pesto, almost like a pesto with chive, and it was really good. I bring this up because you have arugula pesto and honey. This is feta cheese with arugula pesto and honey. And I'm thinking of arugula pesto. That does sound good. You need a lot of arugula for that, but why not?
Yeah, this time of year, there is a lot of arugula.
Yeah, and a pesto is something so fun to be creative with. And as you said, you know, your friend made it with the chives, but you can pretty much make a pesto with any type of green and cheese and olive oil.
And a nut.
And it just, you know, I think recently we did a kale pea stew. That's similar to a pesto. You just don't put the nuts in it. And the arugula pesto in the book. And you can make a broccoli rabe pesto, nasturtium pesto we've done before with feta and walnuts.
So that's a really fun thing. You're giving me some ideas here. Broccoli rabe pesto.
Yeah.
Yes. And one of the tips you'll see throughout our book is if you put a little bit of sugar or a little bit of honey in a lot of your vegetable recipes, especially things that your bitter greens or your spicy greens, that sugar or honey will just smooth things out a little bit.
And we really do want people to be creative even with our recipes, because we believe that recipes are living, breathing, evolving documents, really, of history. And, you know, so we want people to kind of take an idea that we've had and then play around with. And that's why, you know, throughout the book, every single recipe has a notes section where when you're making the recipe, you can make your own notes. Either, oh, this recipe inspired me to try this, or I wanted to add this to this recipe. And then we encourage people to come to our Facebook page or our website and tell us how they adapted the recipe, because then we learn new ideas as well.
We've got a couple of emails here from listeners, guys, Josh and Brent, and I'm going to read these to you. They're questions, and let's see what you can come up with. Ryan in Remington says, help. He says, I got all these big, gnarly, delicious spinach leaves. What can I do with them other than just sauté them?
Well, you can make a spinach pesto.
You can do that. And it's true, spinach, when those leaves get big, they are tough.
Yeah.
So cutting them, you know, almost shred them or, you know, roll them up, you know, and cut them into sort of a chiffonade. And you can sort of even frisé them in hot oil and they'll get nice and crisp. We also have a
spinach chip recipe.
Yeah.
In the book, you know, kale chips have been very popular over the past couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
And so we did a twist on that and made a spinach chip. And then, you know, you can also put them in smoothies. I mean, if you've got a real abundance of the spinach, you know, put them in a blender with some yogurt and some apple juice and, you know, whatever else you have, you know, everything but the kitchen sink, and make a great smoothie with it.
And if you do the chiffonade and then fry them until they're, you know, crispy, and you have this sort of, it's a great topping. So if you have a soft vegetable, if you have a mashed potato puree or a celery puree or something, and then you sprinkle this sort of fried spinach chiffonade on top.
Oh, that sounds good too. You know,
it is very good.
Thank you very much. I've tried the kale chips and had some success with those, but I hadn't thought of trying those big spinach leaves with them too. That's a good idea. I managed to come up with pita chips. Just over the weekend, I said, let me try this in the oven, real slow temperature for, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours. and they got really crispy, and they were great with the hummus over the weekend.
And it's great to do, like, if you've had pita that goes a little bit stale.
Yeah.
And then you just, you know, cut it into triangles and put some olive oil on it and put it in the oven. Delicious.
Exactly what I did. I cut them into triangles. I tossed them in a little olive oil, some salt and pepper, some seasoned salt, and that was all I did. Oh, a little garlic powder, and that was it. Here's Kim in Lauraville with a question. Not sure if it is a vegetable or fruit, but what can you do with rhubarb besides a pie or a sauce? And how about eating with pork? Help, lots of it, lots of rhubarb. Well, Kim, I'd like to see you if you've got lots of rhubarb you're trying to get rid of, because I love rhubarb, and I miss my mother had some in the garden. It came up every spring, and she always made a sauce with strawberries. So it'd be rhubarb strawberry sauce, just a simple sauce, or rhubarb pie. Do you have any other recommendations, guys?
Oh, we love rhubarb, and you know, rhubarb is the first thing that comes up in the farm, and so you know we find as many uses as we possibly can for it. There's a recipe in the book that's absolutely amazing. It's a masala chicken with rhubarb. You know, so we took rhubarb away from dessert and put it in the main course. And for this chicken, which you could do with pork, she could just adapt if she wants to make it with pork. It's just garam masala spices and cardamom and black pepper, and it's sort of slow cooked in a skillet, and then the rhubarb is added, and it gives it that nice sort of fruity flavor on top of all those great Indian spices.
I'm looking at the photograph of that. Boy, that looks really good. I never would have thought of using rhubarb in a savory dish.
Yeah, and we always, whenever we're doing cookbook signings, we always ask people when they get the book to post the picture of what they've made first, or tell us what they choose to make first. And several people have made this recipe first because, you know, they've got rhubarb now. And it's been a very a big crowd pleaser. And again, also a conversation starter, because a lot of people have never had rhubarb. And then those people who have had rhubarb have only had it in a dessert setting. So it's been a real crowd pleaser.
And I'm going to give one more rhubarb tip for people out there.
Okay.
because I love rhubarb. And rhubarb, you know, rhubarb sauce is ugly. It just is. You know, when you cook that rhubarb and it turns into this stringy glop, and it's not pretty. It tastes great. It's not pretty. One of the ways you can avoid that is make your simple syrup first. If you're trying to make a rhubarb sauce, you know, for ice cream or you know, a cake or something, pound cake, make your simple syrup, just your water and your sugar, and then get that dissolved and hot, and then add your thinly sliced rhubarb at the last minute. And before it cooks through, while it's still whole, then you have your sauce with simple syrup and whole pieces of rhubarb, which is much prettier than
it is
that sort of
glop. That would be prettier than that sauce, yeah.
And I put a little rose water or orange water and sometimes black pepper in it. And all is amazing.
Oh. The other thing I like to do with rhubarb, if you're growing it fresh yourself, and this came from my great-grandmother, she used to do this, is she would just take a bowl of sugar and then dip the rhubarb, the raw rhubarb, directly into it and then chew on it. So it's kind of like making a homemade sweet tart.
It is. That is definitely sweet and sour, isn't it? Here's another email, guys. This is Michelle writing in to compare notes with us on strawberries. Strawberries are in season. I don't know if in New York they're quite yet in season.
Not quite yet.
She says, I have a great recipe for strawberry relish. It's made with a quarter cup of lemon juice, a touch of sugar, cilantro, and and one chopped jalapeno pepper. I put it on top of sautéed fish fillet and on vanilla ice cream, both. It's all delicious. Another recipe for asparagus is roasted in the oven with lemon juice and sprinkled with Parmesan cheese. But back on the strawberry relish, I hadn't encountered a use of strawberry like that. I hadn't thought about it. But people like jalapeno with almost anything now, don't they?
Oh, that's true. Put a little spice in it. But I think when people think of strawberry, the first thing that should come to mind is floral. You know, strawberry isn't sweet like a lot of berries. A strawberry has a very floral flavor. So putting it in sort of a pickle or a relish can add a floral spice to it, which is very nice.
And I also love, you know, people often think of, you know, eating a fresh berry, eating something cool. But I love to, you know, slightly heat up the strawberry, cut it into slices, and just, you know, heat it up with a little bit of butter in the skillet, and then use it on like a spinach salad. is really delicious, and it really brings out a very powerful strawberry flavor.
Oh, you know, she mentioned the cilantro with the strawberries. That's very good. The other thing that's nice is we make a strawberry tart.
A galette.
A galette, and we put fresh thyme leaves in it. So you can put basil, strawberry basil,
so you
very
say,
popular,
excuse
but
me,
thyme
you,
goes well.
You say galette, you mean like a pancake that you turn into a turnover? Or
Like a fold-over pie where it's okay. Just a pie crust that's rolled out. Fruit in the middle and fold the edges over.
I just wanted to say something about growing your own or going to the farmer's market. I think it's essential for you to appreciate strawberries is to get them fresh from somewhere. Although yes. I actually do love frozen strawberries, but the strawberries that come from, I don't know where, California or Texas in the late winter, early spring and end up at your supermarket... I find them to be almost have no flavor at all. And you're right. You do have to saute. You have to do something with them.
Yeah. Here's the trick. If you cut open a strawberry and it's white on the inside, it's not ripe. It's not. Yeah. And that's how all of your fresh strawberries are. And you're right. The frozen strawberries in your grocery store are better because they're picked ripe and frozen.
Hey, we were talking about spinach chips, and I just turned the page in your cookbook from the Marcella chicken with rhubarb to oven-fried crispy spinach. And this is a spinach sort of tied in a little bit of a knot, like a bow almost. Mm-hmm. And you just fry this in the oven till it's crispy and serve it as an appetizer or hors d'oeuvre.
Sprinkle some salt on it, yep.
Yeah.
And it's delicious with cheese and, it's great at a little party.
It's sort of more of a texture thing.
Josh Kilmer Purcell and Brent Ridge. I'm going to mention this here and this part of the show. They're going to be in town next Monday. They're coming to Baltimore.
I know.
The Enoch. Have you been to our library yet? The Enoch Pratt Free Library.
No, but we've heard so many amazing things about it. We're so excited to come.
It's a beautiful library, and they're going to have you in the Wheeler Auditorium, the fabulous Beekman Boys, Monday, June 2nd, for a book signing and discussion. This is at 7:00. Their appearance is presented in partnership with Baltimore Greenworks as part of their sustainable speaker series. And they have a great series of speakers at the Pratt Library. And it's a wonderful facility, a wonderful resource, and you'll have a great time here. I didn't ask you each for a favorite from spring or we're headed into summer, so why don't I do that now? Josh, I'll go to you first. From all these recipes in the book, can you pick out one or two favorites that you want to talk about a little bit from spring or summer?
Well, oh gosh, that always puts me on the spot.
Should I go to Brent? Want me to go to Brent first?
Yeah, you can go to me first. I mean, my taste buds are very seasonal, so I'm still, deeply rooted in the spring section of the book. And I think my favorite recipe in the spring section is the pea soup. I like it because I think there's nothing better than fresh sweet peas. So this pea soup we use... a little bit of leek to give it a little bit of bite to it. Mm. And you can serve it either cold or warm. I like it cold, especially on a warm spring day. I think there's just nothing better.
Oh, that does sound great. Josh, go back to Josh.
That led me. See, I'm forward-looking, so I'm pulling from the summer thing. I can't wait every year for tomatoes. We don't eat tomatoes any time of year except when they're in the garden. And we have a great tomato tart that's very...
It's got ricotta cheese. It's so good.
And it's just beautiful when you have all the different colored heirloom tomatoes on the top and the ricotta cheese. And it's perfect picnic food because you can take it with you at room temperature. It's delicious.
I see fava beans in here. Have you had success growing fava?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the favas have always done very well for us. They are an incredibly labor-intensive bean to eat. And to prepare,
You have to shell it, boil it, shell it again, saute it.
But I think worth the effort.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah. And garlic. We had a question for you off of Facebook from Annette. How can I use garlic grass, wild garlic?
Wild garlic.
I know you have.
I wonder if she's thinking like spring onion or ramps.
Yeah, I notice you have ramps in here. You guys appreciate ramps. This is good.
Oh, this is good.
You know that we have the ramp festival in Western Maryland and West Virginia. And do you run into ramps in New York State?
Oh absolutely.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I thought that was a West Virginia, Western Maryland thing, but I guess not.
No, so, we love them, and maybe that's what she's talking about is the ramps. And one of the things, because we get tired of, I mean, the best thing to do with ramps, they're so short-lived. You throw them on the grill, whole with a little olive oil, brush them and grill them. You really enjoy the flavor, but we sometimes get buckets full, and we get tired of that. So we make a ramp custard cup, which is really great. Cream and egg and some finely chopped ramps.
You can also pickle them. You can pickle them, like make a refrigerator pickle out of them,
mm-hmm.
Which is really delicious.
I wonder if she's talking. There's also garlic scapes that
garlic,
you know,
scape. I want to ask,
well,
you
she
about
said
the,
wild though.
She yeah. said, "Well, I think she's talking about that wild. To me, it's wild onion grass. You reach down. You
oh,
grow,
in right. the yard.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what I thought she might have been talking about. What about the garlic scapes? Nancy Taylor Robeson, who's been on our show, she's a great gardener here. She brought me some last year, and I guess I've never really appreciated these. This part of the garlic, but it's given me a new appreciation for them.
We love them.
Yeah.
I mean, one, they're so sculptural, and we beautiful. Actually, in our shop in Sharon Springs, we actually use them a lot in flower arrangements because they're so
beautiful.
They
have that loop-de-loop at the top.
But you can do so many things with them. Saute them.
Again, a pesto
make
is,
a delicious,
is amazing.
A delicious pesto, which actually the old the movie star Tab Hunter came to visit our farm a couple of summers ago and taught us his recipe for garlic scape pesto.
Tab Hunter. Tab Hunter from what?
Yes.
Sandra D, A Summer Place.
Yes.
Is that Tab Hunter?
Matinee Idol Tab Hunter.
Nicest guy in the world.
Wait. This is funny. So he comes to the Beekman Boys farm.
Yep.
To show you what he does with garlic scapes?
Well, he was a fan of the Fabulous Beekman Boys show.
Okay.
And he's also a big horse, he's big into horses. And so Saratoga Springs is very,
right.
not too far from our farm. So he was there for the horse races. And so he came out to the farm for the weekend. And he's a big foodie. And so we really just harvested things from the garden and cooked things. And when he saw that we had the scapes, he said, oh, I make this great garlic scape pesto. And it really was delicious. And people can actually go to our website, beekman1802.com. And if you search for Tab Hunter or garlic scapes, that recipe will pop up. It's really good.
You have shrimp with garlic scapes. Yeah, that's in the recipe book. What is jumbleberry pie?
Well, it's pretty much exactly it.
Well, I never heard of jumbleberry, so help me. What's jumble? Just any berries thrown in, or what is it?
Pretty much it. Yeah, it's just, you know, whatever berries you have on hand, throw them in there. We always say that if you can make a good pie crust, and of the two of us, Josh is the master pie crust maker. You can make so many things. You can make things that are sweet. You can make things that are savory. So mastering that pie crust is a great skill to have in your back pocket.
I just spotted another recipe. Boy, I'm going to spend some more time with this book. Parmesan-packed eggplant meatballs. Eggplant meatballs.
Yes.
This is how I get Brent to eat eggplant.
Eggplant, you know, is not one of my favorite vegetables.
It's your very least favorite.
Yeah, I don't like the texture of it because most of the time you're seeing it, you know, either grilled or you're seeing eggplant parm. And I just don't like the texture of it. But Josh really does like it. And so he came up with this recipe of, I guess you would call them meatless balls. They're eggplant meatless balls.
Right.
But you can use them just like you would a meatball. And it when it's done, it kind of has a taste and a texture of falafel. But it's just really, really good.
There's a lot of Parmesan cheese.
That's great. I'm going to try that one definitely because I'm always looking for new ways to deal with eggplant, and I like meatballs. So there we go.
Who doesn't?
Listen, one more time. Josh Kilmer Purcell and Brent Ridge appearing at the Enoch Pratt Free Library in the Wheeler Auditorium next Monday, June 2nd at 7 p.m. They'll be there with their new book, The Beekman 1802 Heirloom Vegetable Cookbook. Gentlemen, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. So thanks for this cookbook, and thanks for all these ideas. I enjoyed it.
Thanks so much. We look forward to seeing everyone there.
Okay. Thanks very much. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in. That's our midday for today. See you again soon.
Midday senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer and director is Jonathan Ahrens. The associate producer, Michael Himowitz. Our interns are James Daly, Tom Cartaxo, and Michelle Richardson. Music produced by Jeff Truman in High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming available at wypr.org. Dan Rodrick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.